It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have Aphrodite!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rumble, band.video, Vigilante TV, now on YouTube, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate your amazing support as we continue on. Almost 600 episodes here. We're working on it. Getting things done. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the best place to do that. Hopefully you've bookmarked activistpost.com. Go check that out for all of your daily news and information. And if you haven't rated the show, you got 5 seconds to go do it. I appreciate it. Our sponsors are great. They help to keep this show going. I got news for you. Chemical Free Body, they have a new flavor for Green 85. They just sent it to me. It's apple. It's really good. In fact, I'll tell you what, Tim called me and said, I got this new flavor, I'm sending it to you, tell me what you think. It's really good. But he didn't need me to tell him that because they did a live survey in front of a bunch of people. They had a big movie theater filled with people. They gave him the first version and rated it. 30% said they liked the taste and would drink it no matter what. That was the original version. They gave him the apple version, 90% said they would drink it. So this might be the game changer that you were looking for. If you're interested, go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro, do some shopping, check out that apple flavored Green 85 that they've got. Still looks green, still looks exactly like it did before. It just will be extremely confusing when you taste it because you're expecting it to taste different than it is. But check that out. How about the Water Hero as well? Structured water for your home. You can get the pitchers for it, kind of like a Brita pitcher. Except it'll actually work and clean out the impurities. There's a lot going on. Try the detox bundle. It's all happening. Go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro and check it out for yourself. And if you haven't gotten yourself storable food, chop, chop, get on it. Because this is one of those things where you'd rather be a couple months early than a day late. Augustin Farms has an amazing selection of storable food for you. They have emergency kits too, like the buckets. You can grab those and go, or you can order them for your family members who live out of state and, you know, make sure that they're set up. But if you're, you know, a purist, if you're going to actually eat this food in the future and you want to have high quality and a little bit of a variety, this is the place to go. In fact, you should just go over there anyway, even if you're maybe not in the market, just check out what they've got. AugustinFarms.com. You would be surprised at the technology in storable food. I was behind the times. I did not know you could have butter powder and eggs and dairy and fruits and vegetables, and they've done it all. They've got a wide variety of food available. They have emergency kits. They have camping supplies. And on top of that, they have a warehouse sale items section. So if you're looking for stuff that's on sale, half price, whatever, check it out. Go to AugustinFarms.com. Promo code is macro to save you a little bit of money on your way out the door. And considering this episode is about the economic cliff that we are standing on, you're going to want to save some money, right? You're going to want to be thinking about things proactively. You're going to want to, get honest about what we see. And so this episode is going to be a little bit about that. I hate to be the bearer of bad news when it comes to the economic landscape. But of course, it's not my fault. I'm not the one doing it. I'm just reporting on it. It's bad. It's not a catastrophe yet, but it's not going in the right direction. And I don't say this to freak people out, of course, but again, I'm of the opinion that I want it. Give it to me straight, Doc. Like, tell me what's happening, you know, and then I'll plan accordingly. Like, so I know it might be maybe scary to hear all this stuff. And again, I'm really not trying to freak people out, but would you rather not know that this is coming, or would you rather have some information and then sort of plan accordingly? So we'll talk a little bit about what we're seeing. I don't know, tourist wise, kind of not the greatest indicator, but you know, maybe a indicator of disposable income, right? We'll talk about Vegas, what's going on there. I want to talk to you about what Warren Buffett is doing with his money, because he's always got advanced knowledge, so you can watch him to see what's coming. I want to talk about fast food, what's happened. There's been an apocalypse in the fast food industry in America, which is frankly fine with me. You know, I don't wish that for the people who are going to lose their jobs, but it's going away. It's not limited to fast food. There's a ton of major companies that are downsizing. We'll talk a little bit about that. I want to talk about SNAP, all the benefits that are going to people who are, boy, they're making it really hard for me to cheerlead for them. You know, I'm a compassionate guy in some respects, but boy, once you burn that bridge with me, you can go fuck yourself. All those people making TikTok videos like, oh, when my SNAP runs out, I'll be looting the place. All right. Well, just make sure we turn your SNAP off forever, right? Get a job, hippie. I want to talk about housing assistance. I want to talk about New York City. It's going to be a disaster. And then we'll wrap up with some solutions, you know, and because we can't just complain about this, though it's worthy of complaints. But if we don't have some opportunities for you to say, all right, this sucks, but what can I do differently? Then I'm just scaring you for no reason. So I'm not trying to do that. We'll wrap up with some solutions, some good ones too, by the way. I mean, this is going to be a real gut check for a lot of people. You know, I've unfortunately been there. You know, I've been with the crazy markets go up, markets come down. I lived through the dot-com bubble. I was day trading during the dot-com bubble, which was fun. if you're suicidal and hate yourself, it's fun. Bartending at night, day trading during the day, it was fun until it wasn't, right? And so you see how that the markets can collapse pretty quickly. Housing, I was in it and still couldn't see the frothiness of, well, like, that's not true. I could see the frothiness of it. I just thought it was going to settle down a little bit. So, you know, and I've been through some wild swings, and I say that because I now recognize a lot of the signs the second time around. Like, you'd think I would know the real estate, the implications of a real estate collapse working in real estate in the hottest market in the world aside from Dubai. When I was in Las Vegas, it was the hottest real estate market in America. It was the second in the world, just only to Dubai. And so you go through all that. You think, oh, I work in real estate. I can see the real estate bubble. I mean, hell, I'm in the industry. And when I couldn't accurately get my bearings on what was happening, and I worked there and I was paying attention to it every day, it made me realize that I was looking at the wrong sources. I was getting information from traditional standard mainstream media news sources, and they have a vested interest in keeping the bubble going, right? And keeping the scam going. So you read the paper and it'll say, yeah, things are a bit overheated, but here's the reason why this is normal, X, Y, and Z. And you go, oh, yeah, that does kind of make sense. Or, yeah, Vegas is overheated in real estate, but we've always got this pipeline of people from Southern California. And you see how shitty Southern California is and how all those people want to leave. By the way, we'll get to that. And so, you know, you go, well, yeah, that's right. You know, it is a better place to live than Southern California. I've lived in both. It's easier, cheaper, better on taxes. There's a million reasons. So I could convince myself that everything was going to be fine until it wasn't. And a part of it was, to be fair, I didn't want it to collapse. I'm working in it. I'm living in it. I don't want it to collapse. It is against my best interest for the real estate market to collapse. Therefore, I don't want it to. And because of that, all sorts of biases come in, right? I read an article that I want to read, and I don't read the article I don't want to read because it might say something I don't want to hear. So that is a reality. And so when we're looking at the economic forecast and what's happening, we have to be honest with ourselves in some respects. You know, did you just buy a new house? Because I did. And do you want the real estate market to go down? No, I don't. Did I need to buy it? I needed, the timing was such that we just needed to go. We needed to buy it when we needed to buy it, right? So I'm not trying to time the market. Do I want it to collapse by 20%? Absolutely not. Do I think it will? Probably. I mean, I do. And that is, again, that's frustrating, scary, not great for us going forward, but do we want to live in denial about it? Because that's even more dangerous. Okay. So I'd rather know what we're up against and, you know, sort of handle it accordingly than to live in some sort of delusionary reality. And so I mentioned Vegas, obviously, because I had lived there for a while but the economy of Vegas is an interesting thing. It's not like the economy of Wichita, Kansas, right? It's not like I'm going to drill down on that and say this is an indicator of what's going on in America. Las Vegas is, though, in some respects, and this isn't going to be a whole episode on Las Vegas for the record, but just I do need to talk about it simply because from the tourism standpoint, from the visitors stats, but you know it's bad when nobody's going to Las Vegas, right? And the stats are out. Visitor volume down 12% July over July. The MGM CEO admitting that you shouldn't be charged $12 for a Starbucks in a $28 a night hotel room at the Excalibur. That's true. That's true. It's they have to, MGM needs to get honest about their demographics the fact that I'm not the CEO of MGM, and I know you can't charge $12 for a Starbucks inside the Excalibur Hotel. It's the wrong demographic. You can't do it in Circus Circus either. This is a budget conscious group. There's nothing wrong with that. If done correctly throughout your life, you move yourself through all of these categories. You start off as a budget conscious 19-year-old with a fake ID trying to go to Vegas and get $1.99 steak and eggs at 2 o'clock in the morning and 99-cent Heinekens. I did it. I'd still do it if I could. So, you know, you have to make these calculations. The fact that the CEO is coming out and admitting this, I suppose, is a good thing. That he had to admit it is crazy to me, that they're not understanding who their customers are. Year to date, 2025, travel, one of the best ways to measure Vegas is just airport travel. It's not always the most accurate because you get a lot of people who live there and aren't tourists, but airport travel is down 9%. Airport traffic is down 9% at Harry Reid International Airport. Used to be McCarran, but when you keep the secret space program under wraps, like Harry Reid does, they name an international airport after you, which is nice. Convention attendance is down 18.7%. That is called a catastrophe in Las Vegas. So if you are a tourist, got your friend, got your family, and you go to Las Vegas for a weekend, 4 days, whatever, what you don't understand, there's multiple different versions of Las Vegas for people. If you're a tourist there to use the pool and do all that stuff, you're presented with one side of Las Vegas. If you're there for a convention, you get a totally different experience. And if you're there for like magic show or CES or something like that, when there's 150,000 people in town just for that conference, it's like a crazy sub economy. All the prostitutes come out, you know, like all the hookers fly in from LA and San Francisco and Dallas and, you know, to strip for the weekends. It's like a weird economy. So convention attendance down 18.7% is a catastrophe for prostitutes. I assure you, they are down 18.7% in their revenue if you were to talk to them. But see, Canada, part of the reason why this is happening, that these numbers are down 12% for visitor volume, 9% at the airport, 18%, almost 19% for conventions, is that it's not the only reason, but one of the reasons is that Canada is very mad at Donald Trump. They're very mad. They're taking it out on Las Vegas specifically. They love Las Vegas. They come down. And that is sort of a subset of that is that the spillover into Las Vegas real estate, because I can't tell you how many houses I sold to Canadians. I sold a house to a guy from Calgary and he came in and it was freezing ass cold in Vegas. It was 35 degrees in Vegas. And he came in and he was wearing shorts. He walked in my sales office. Like, hey man, what's up? You're in town? He's like, yeah, I just got in this morning. I go, you're in fucking shorts? What are you, out of your mind? He goes, it's 100 degrees warmer in Las Vegas than it was in Calgary. I was like, oh shit. Okay. So when it's 100 degrees warmer in Las Vegas than it is in Canada, you might want to buy a secondary place in Las Vegas if you have the money and you have the ability to, but they're not. That's not happening. They're not even coming to Las Vegas anymore. The Canadians have decided we're done. So, and the housing market needs them, right? It's down 2.1% just from last year. If you're interested in buying or selling a house in Las Vegas or Henderson, Las Vegas area, go to alterluxury.com. You can find me. My partners. I'm the president of that real estate brokerage, so I can hook you up and help you buy or sell a place. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to own a high-rise condo in Miami right now, these days, after the HOA retrofits. Have you seen that? You know, they had that what was it, Seaside building, Seaside Estates, something, high-rise building in Miami just fell over one day, just collapsed. And now they're having to go in and retrofit all that. Boy. It's a real estate condo catastrophe in South Florida because of the retrofitting, things like that. That's a huge problem, but that's regional, right? If you're not in South Florida and you're not in a condo, you don't give a shit. But how about this? Nationally, home listings are up 14%. That's not good necessarily. You know, homes for sale. There are, as of the recording of this, 2,058,000 homes for sale. However, the sellers outnumber the buyers by 500,000. Okay, that's a problem. That's a supply and demand economics 101 issue. We have here are the I'll give you listings and sales, right? 2023, we're talking about national numbers, these monthly sales, monthly listings, monthly sales. 2023, 2 years ago, 1.53 million listings, 500,000 sales. Last year, 1.8 million listings, 500,000 sales. This year, 2.05 million listings, 475,000 sales. So on track still to be about the same. So the listings have gone from 1.5 million to 2 million, but the sales have stayed the same. That's something to keep an eye on. That's something that will ultimately force prices down. This is pretty easy. Supply and demand. When you have 500,000 more sellers than you have buyers, then the buyers can pick and choose. The best houses will go first, the best price, best locations, all those things. Delusional, unrealistic people who are sticking to prices that they saw a couple years ago or that their neighbors got, that they think that they're, those will be the last houses to sell. So let me give you a little bit of advice for having 25 years of real estate experience, not just as a salesperson, but as a broker who oversees salespeople. If you're selling your house, you have got to be very honest about the price. You have to take your ego out of it. It is so easy to get caught up in, I need to get this for my house, or my house is worth this. Man, it's a hard conversation to have with people because they tie a bunch of their identity into it and they think that you're shortchanging them on their value as a person, and it's just not the case. The numbers don't lie, okay? If you're selling your house right now, if you need to sell your house, or you're about to list it, I would err on the side of keeping the price way more reasonable than you would like to. Move it and be done with it, right? Because the last thing you want to do is have a listing that sits out there for 6 or 8 months. It gets stale. Everybody looks at it. They go, what's wrong with that? They go, it's overpriced. Well, then what are you going to come in with a price? Well, I'll come in with a price that's so low that they'll throw me out of that. You know, they'll tell me to take a hike. But that's what happens when you, so be honest with the value of your house and hire a realtor who knows what the fuck they're doing. Let's move on. Let's talk about what Warren Buffett is doing. Are you familiar with Warren Buffett? He's just a sweet old guy who lives in Omaha and he likes McDonald's and Dairy Queen and all that stuff, but he's just like you and me. His company is sitting on $382 billion of cash. Do you know that? A third of $1 trillion. Berkshire Hathaway is just sitting on it. They weren't sitting on this much cash before. They were sitting on a ton of equities, and they've been selling them. Why are they selling them? That would be a reasonable question to ask any major company that's doing that, but especially when it's Warren Buffett. Why are you, Warren Buffett, selling? Because he has a long track record of buying and holding forever. And yeah, you'll rebalance time, you know, here and there. And if something goes a little too high, they might cut back and might dump a little bit of it, take some profits and rebalance and things like that. I'm not going to get into the details of how they balance their portfolio. But just know that Warren Buffett isn't the type of guy who goes in, buys something, gets a quick hit, sells it, moves on. There's plenty of guys who do that, but Warren Buffett isn't that guy. So in the last quarter, he's added $37.6 billion of cash to his position, which means that he sold $37.6 billion worth of something else and said, I'm going to sell this and I want US dollars for it. Okay. We won't ask him why he wants US dollars, right? But he does. They're currently holding $283.2 billion in equities. This is, and they've bought, so equities being, let's just say stocks, right? So $283 billion of equities, stocks, $382 billion of cash, and $540 billion that they just bought in the last 12 months of U.S. treasuries. So that's basically like, I've got cash. I'm not going to sit on my cash because it just loses its value. So I'll buy treasuries and things like that. So what they do is they take the cash, they buy treasuries with it. You get a little percentage. But it's better to make that a little percentage on your, if you're just going to keep it as cash, and that's what he's doing. He's building a war chest. He's waiting for something. You know, he's waiting for something. What's he waiting for? He's waiting for a better buying opportunity. So what has he sold? I think this is interesting to take a look. He sold 20 million shares of Apple last quarter. Now, 20 million, if you and I sold 20 million shares of Apple, that would be all of our Apple shares, I assume, right? Well, not them. They have 300 million. Shares of Apple. They sold 20 million, right? Part of the reason why they did that was that their Apple shares lost $9 billion in value just in the last quarter. So they're like, it's been a little overheated here. Mag 7, Fang, all that. These companies are out there are making a lot of money, showing a lot of interest. You know, we've had them for, we've done well. Let's pare back a little bit. So 20 million out of 300 million is not much. Same with Chevron. They sold 16.7 million shares of Chevron last quarter out of a total of 102 million shares. I can tell you why they're selling Chevron. Because Chevron is in California and Chevron is trying to get itself to Texas as fast as it can because running an oil company in California is a catastrophe. Warren Buffett also sold 21.3 million shares of Bank of America. Again, to be fair, this is out of a total of 630 million shares. So you're talking about, he's like 5%. You know, he's lopping off about 5%. Well, with Apple, you know, 6.5%, 6-7%. So yeah, you can't sell it all. When you have positions like this, let's just say you woke up tomorrow and said, we got to get out of Bank of America. They're going to get liquidated. It's going to be a catastrophe. We got to get out. And he's got 630 million shares. Even if he wanted to, he couldn't sell all those shares immediately. It would tank the price and it would, you know, it'd be a catastrophe. So you've got to do it in small blocks. Even if he sees an iceberg dead ahead, we're ready to hit it in 5 minutes. He simply cannot sell all of it fast enough. So they're going to have to do this in small pieces. And look, he's moving into cash because he wants to be ready when there's blood in the streets, as Rothschild says, right? So let's talk, is there blood in the streets? Is it coming? Well, maybe not yet, but it's coming. Let's talk a little bit about fast food stores, and this will be real quick. They're shutting down. There's almost no demand. I don't know if you saw what happened to Chipotle's stock price. Chipotle is partially owned by McDonald's too, so I don't know. They're sort of insulated, but there's no money. People aren't eating out anymore. Chipotle came out with their numbers were like, it's like a third of the revenue was like down by like a third of the revenue. Some catastrophe. And people are like, holy shit, these stores are going to go out of business. Well, yeah, they are. So the revenue drop for Chipotle has been $150 million. That's revenue that they expected to have, that they had last year, that they were kind of counting on having, you know, again, the whole goal was like, let's go up, 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 not down, down, down. Their revenue was down $150 million from last year. KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, they don't call it Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore because I don't think there's chicken in it, maybe, but their revenue is down $250 million. Popeyes, $91 million. TGI Fridays, which isn't necessarily fast food. It's more like, I don't know what you want to call it, novelty food. TGI Fridays revenues are down $100 million and they're in bankruptcy. What about Hooters? Hooters revenues down $80 million. What happened to them? Now they're in bankruptcy. Denny, everybody loves Denny's. When you're hammered at 2 o'clock in the morning, Denny's revenue down $40 million. I'm going to take a wild swing at this one. I'm going to say that you want to talk about like connecting dots. I'm going to say that the Denny's revenue is down $40 million because the younger generation doesn't drink alcohol. That's my guess. Because I don't know the numbers, but I would love to see the stats of Denny's revenue after 11 o'clock at night, from 11 o'clock at night until 4 in the morning. I would love to. I guarantee you they do at least 50% of their revenue at that time. They have to. And considering that they're down $40 million, they better start convincing this young generation to start doing Jaeger shots, because that's the only way you stroll into a Denny's at 3 o'clock in the morning. Papa John's revenue is down $30 million too. Probably didn't help that their founder went on like an Ambien tirade on X that would make Roseanne Barr blush. Not great for revenue. So what is the result of this? Well, as I mentioned, TGI Fridays, $100 million in lost revenue. They wind up in bankruptcy, and then they get 100 stores closed. Okay, so that's what could happen to you. Hooters is, Hooters is in bankruptcy. They'll have their stores cut down as well. Burger King closing 377 stores in the United States. TGI Fridays, 100 stores. Jack in the Box, 120 stores. Hardee's, which is the equivalent of Carl's Jr. for those of you on the East Coast. Hardee's, 145 stores are closing. Wendy's, 72 stores. Popeye's, 30 stores. Denny's, with their down $40 million in revenue, is also going to close 90 restaurants because of that. So there's something happening. There's no money for disposable income. And disposable income is TGI Fridays. You know, it's one thing if you take the family there and, you know, you guys go every, you know, once every couple of years, you go to a TGI Fridays and it's, you know, for the record, I almost died at a TGI Fridays. And I am not even slightly being sarcastic here. I got food poisoning so bad in 2003. That I made a comment to that I didn't go to TGI Fridays for years. And then I was in Miami on business. And the only thing that was open was a TGI Fridays. And I went in there, sat at the bar and ordered food against my better judgment. Made an offhanded comment to the bartender that I haven't been here since I almost died in 2003. And he goes, "Where were you?" And I said, "I was in Las Vegas." He goes, "Hang on a second." And he went and got the manager and came back and had the man had me explain the story to the manager. He goes, "Could you tell my manager where you were?" I was like, "What's going on here?" He goes, "You were in Vegas in 2003 and you said you almost died?" I was like, "Yeah." Kind of like half joking. And he said, "You're lucky you didn't." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, Well, we got hit with a batch of bad green onions." And I said, that's the only thing I could feel like I could taste as I was throwing up all night long. And he said, you're lucky you didn't die because the same batch of green onions went to a Mexican restaurant called Chi-Chi's in the Pacific Northwest. And it killed a couple of people. And they wound up closing down the entire chain after that. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I would tell people, I feel like I almost died. I really did almost die from TGI Fridays. So You eat those loaded mashed potatoes with those little sprinkled on green scallions at your own peril because they almost killed me. So I, for one, will rejoice when TGI Fridays goes out of business. No, I'm just kidding. But they really did almost kill me. I'm sure it wasn't their fault. Let's talk about some more recent layoffs because it's one thing if like Hobby Lobby is laying off all of the low-skilled employees that work there. And that would be awful, and it's probably going to happen. But it's kind of like, well, you know, we'll just go out and get some more low-skilled greeters or cashiers or whatever to work there. It's not the end of the world. However, what I'm seeing with the recent layoffs in skilled labor is extremely alarming because it's the companies who are firing people that, you know, really should be thriving right now, and yet they aren't. Intel, computer chip manufacturing company Intel, has just laid off 24,000 employees. Okay, this isn't McDonald's, though McDonald's probably on the list. But you know what I mean? You're not some dipshit working at Intel. You are a college graduate, probably an engineer, definitely a high-paying job, and you are in demand. You're a computer scientist. You're working on chips. I mean, this is essential to the direction that humanity is going, and you're laying off 24,000 people because you don't need them or you can't make money. Because if it's you can't make money, that's one thing. If it's that you don't need them, then I think we've got a societal question that's going on, and that has to do with AI and this direction that we're going where a lot of people aren't going to be needed. It's not just going to be guys who work at Intel. It's definitely going to be the guy flipping burgers at McDonald's because the Tesla robot came in and he does it way better without any of the complaints and none of the bullshit. And cheaper. So Intel's laying off 24,000 people. That's alarming, but it's not nearly the end. Amazon, 30,000 people, up to 30,000 people. Now, some of those will be, actually, half of those are going to be high-ranking executives, and the other half will be low-wage earning, I don't know, drivers, warehouse people. You want to talk about a company that is most definitely going to robots, the first chance they get, it's Amazon. Anything in their warehouse, anybody who's been sorting packages, that's all going to go away. Anybody who's been driving packages from point A to point B, that's going to go away with automated driving. Anybody who's driving Amazon vans right now delivering things, maybe you'll be in the van. Maybe you'll have to physically get out and walk it to the front door, but the van will be driving itself and you'll be working in the back of the van, of the truck, sorting probably. So UPS, speaking of in the back of the truck sorting, UPS laying off 48,000 people. That is a lot. Accenture, 11,000. Ford, 11,000. Microsoft, 7,000. Now, I have no love for Microsoft, you know, of course. But 7,000 Microsoft employees versus 7,000 Walmart employees are very, very different. Tax revenue that's generated by those 7,000 workers, the homes that are bought, the private schools that are paid for, the grocery, all that stuff goes away. That's not like firing somebody who's a cashier at Walmart. That person is applying for food stamps anyway, SNAP benefits and all of it. You fire them, there is no noticeable effect. You fire 7,000 Microsoft employees, and that's a huge toll. I mean, it's a lot of money that Microsoft doesn't have to pay, and maybe they are being replaced by AI. That would be concerning. Nestle, one of the most dangerous food companies in the world, is laying off 16,000 people. PricewaterhouseCoopers is laying off 5,600, Salesforce 4,000, Paramount 2,000, Target 1,800. These are upper management. Kroger 1,000, Applied Materials, which is a chip manufacturing company, 1,400 employees going away. Skilled labor, high tech, management, all gone. This is alarming. What are these people going to do? You know, like, there's only so many who are wired to go start their own company. For some people, they'll be like, I was looking for an excuse to leave this company. They're going to give me my buyout. I'm out. Like, I'm going. I'm going to go start a bakery and make croissants in the morning. I've always wanted to do it. Good for you. Go do that. I hope you do. I hope this pivot is like the greatest thing that ever happened to you. But I am fearful that it's not going to be for most people. I don't think a lot of people are going to wake up and start a new company with their newfound freedom. I think a lot of people are going to leave and go back to Mexico. I think that's what's going to happen a lot. I think, if AI is replacing these people, skilled labor, Microsoft people, and they have to go somewhere else and get a job, it just pushes everybody else down, right? Theoretically. Because then, if I got to have a choice between some guy who's an ex-Microsoft engineer who's going to come in here and kick ass and needs a job because he just got laid off, or I'm going to roll with the person that I've currently had who's just figuring out Python, just reading it in a book, trying to learn to code and figure it all out, I'll take the Microsoft guy, right? So everybody else is going to start losing their jobs down the line as these unemployed people then come in because they're in demand, they come in, fill some need, and then some other guy gets fired. So what if AI makes the company 15% more efficient? Then do you fire 15% of the workforce? I mean, these are decisions, calculations that are going to be made moving forward. It isn't happening right this minute. We're getting some improvements in efficiencies for sure in certain areas. But 5 years from now, when the AI thing, and it's a bit of a bubble, of course, but still, the concept, the technology, the efficiency, what it's used for, what it could be used for, 5 years from now, it's going to be a totally different landscape. So If an AI company, if AI makes your company 15% more efficient, you may be carrying 15% too many people. And the AI will tell you that. And they'll tell you who to cut. Because they'll say, this person takes too many cigarette breaks, and this person doesn't do enough revenue, and this person is late all the time. It'll tell you all of it, right? So that's something to be concerned about. So the high-end earners, the people who work at Intel and Accenture and Microsoft and PricewaterhouseCoopers and Salesforce and Paramount and all these are high-earner, high-educated, skilled labor, high-tech management people, okay? Now, let's go to the exact opposite side of the spectrum and the people who are receiving government benefits, state benefits, SNAP benefits. Let's talk a little bit about this in terms of the percentages state to state, because you can tell quite a bit about the health of a state based on this one statistic, which is remarkable. Percentage of the population receiving SNAP benefits in 2024. In the state of New Mexico, 21.2% of the people living there were on government assistance. Okay. I will make a connection also. What is the lowest ranked state in terms of education in the United States? New Mexico, also. So you're going to have dumb kids, and they're going to grow up to be dumb adults, okay? And you're going to be on benefits. I'm going to remove from this conversation the small segment of the people receiving SNAP benefits who are actually deserving of them, who are the people who are injured, sick, physically unable to work. They were born deformed. They were born with spina bifida, or they have cerebral palsy or something like this, right? They are unable and will be unable to work due to an event that was no fault of their own, an unfortunate catastrophe in the universe that they were born in a condition that needs help. We should help those people. We should absolutely help those people, because that's a sign of a decent society when you help those people out. But I don't believe that we should help the people that are mooching off the system. I don't believe that we should go out of our way to make sure that those people are taken care of. In fact, I think the best thing that could happen would be a nice little shaking of their rattling of their cage to get them into a belief that, hey, you know these benefits that you have been hooked on intergenerationally? Your entire family tree has been taking these benefits generation after generation. You need to know that it is possible that it can all go away. If for no other reason, that maybe you will change your attitude. Because I have seen the most disgusting stuff on social media, and I see disgusting stuff for a living. But the people who are talking about how they're going to get theirs, I'm going to get mine. By the way, this is not just the black thing. The majority of people on SNAP benefits are white, so, but the ones that are posting the videos are not the white ones. They're the black ladies that are saying, we're going to go in here, I'm going to go get all this stuff. You want to make people have zero sympathy for your cause? Keep doing stuff like that. Like, I can be empathetic about people who are down on their luck and need a hand. I don't love it coming from the government, but there's times in life when you need a hand. And some people, if you're there, somebody can give, you know, it's great. But when your entire existence is based around this, you've just become a parasite, and that's what you are. If your entire family lineage has run off of government assistance, you're a parasite. You are quite literally the definition of a parasite. Doesn't make you a bad person. I just have no respect for you. That's all. And of course, you don't care about that. 19.6% of the people living in the District of Columbia are on SNAP benefits. That's 1 in 5. What about Louisiana? 18.4%. How about Oregon? 17.7%. Oklahoma? 16.8%. West Virginia? 15.7%. Massachusetts? 15.6%. So now we're at like 1 in 8, roughly. 1 in 7 of everybody in the state of Nevada and the state of Pennsylvania and Illinois. The state of New York, 14.7% of the people that you see in the entire state of New York are on government assistance. California, 13.6% of 40 million. 13.6% of 40 million. Okay. So you're talking about 5 million people. I could fill up the Rose Bowl. This is my go-to calculation since I was in the Rose Bowl, which holds roughly 80, 90,000 people. I could fill up the Rose Bowl every single night for 2 months straight with all the people who are just in California on government assistance, on welfare. Over 5 million people in California. It's unsustainable. Los Angeles County, number one. 31% of the people in Los Angeles County are on food stamps. 31%. And do you know, you don't know probably, but that is out of a grand total of 3.28 million in Los Angeles County. So the math is that in Los Angeles County, there are 1 million people on food stamps just in Los Angeles County alone. You know Los Angeles, the city that Karen Bass is the mayor of? With the fires and all that, just a total abomination, California. By the way, the lowest rates, I've told you the highest rates, but the lowest percentages of the population receiving SNAP benefits, New Hampshire, 5.5%, Wyoming, 4.9%, and Utah, 4.8%. So this is... Let's dig in a little bit more. By the way, SNAP stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And in the last 12 months, the United States government has spent $106 billion on this. How many people with cerebral palsy are getting their benefits because of this? Probably a very, very small section. How many people, how much of the $106 billion is going to people who have been on welfare their entire lives and whose parents have been on welfare their entire lives and whose grandparents were on welfare their entire lives? How many? How much of that $106 billion? We can't spend that money on anything else better than that. This, by the way, SNAP. It's snap your fingers and food magically appears for 42 million people. That's really what it is. They have no concept how much anything costs. Because it doesn't cost anything to them. Just so you know, how much money is, like, ask yourself, would this money help you? Because right now, it's $2,393 a month. But when Biden was president, it was over $3,000 a month. Like, picture a debit card that, and now to be clear, it doesn't work. Your debit card for SNAP, it only works in certain items, works on most things, but it doesn't work on alcohol and doesn't work on tobacco and it doesn't work on some things. But that's okay, because if you have $1,000 of SNAP benefits on your card, and you want to get high, you can go sell that $1,000 to that dude down the block from you for $500 in cash. Now, you get $500 in cash that you can go spend to buy crack. He gets $1,000 of food for $500, right? It's a win-win. So everybody gets a little something. California receives $12.6 billion in SNAP benefits, at least they did last year. And that's up from $6 billion in 2019. So in just five years, the amount of money in California that was going to pay for SNAP doubled. It doubled. I said I would talk about the demographics. This is what it says with regard to who is using SNAP. And you can go get mad at me if you'd like, but I'm just reading the numbers that they gave me. White people, whites are, this is according to their numbers now, 61% of the population of America, and they represent 36.5% of the users. Hispanics are 16% of the population of America, and they represent 13% of the users. Asians are 5.9% of the population of America, and they represent 3.3% of the SNAP benefits. Here's where people get frustrated with the Black community. Blacks are 12% of the American population, and they represent 26% of the SNAP benefits. You see, everybody else was, whites were 61% and then 36%, 16% and then 13%. Asians, roughly 6% of the population, about 3%. So for the whites and Asians, they only about half of their users are on it. But Black population's 12%, and yet they represent more than double? Come on, man. You're not doing... This is regardless of color of your skin, okay? This is a trap. Government benefits are a trap. You can't... You've got to see a bigger picture with this, right? I've said it's just that mice get caught in the mousetrap because they cannot figure out why the cheese is free. You're taking government cheese, you're stuck in the mousetrap. You're never going to excel. And, you know, to be fair, I think probably a large segment of the population here doesn't want to excel. They're not trying to excel. They have no hopes and dreams and aspirations of accomplishing great things. Because if you did, you wouldn't be on government welfare. If you are on government welfare, then you take your dreams and hopes and all that stuff and you flush it down the toilet. Because you can't succeed while you're receiving government benefits. Don't you understand that? 59% of illegal-headed households, so households in America where, let's just say the man, is illegal. 59% of those households are on welfare. So this idea that like illegal immigrants are going to come to, you know, they're going to come to this country, they're going to work really hard, they're going to be a net positive benefit to all this stuff. I'm just telling you right here, right now, that's not what the numbers say. The numbers say that of all those illegals that have come here, 60% of them are on welfare, 48% on food stamps. If this is a net benefit, then why are more than half of the people coming here coming to the country and then immediately getting free money? How is that benefiting the country? It'd be one thing if you're like, well, we're getting cheap labor. They're not fucking working. Not only are they not working, they're not going to work. Because again, if I have to make a calculation on who I'm going to hire for my cashier job at the coffee shop, am I going to hire Javier who doesn't speak any English, or am I going to hire that goddamn Microsoft employee who got fired and is looking for anything? Might be a bit of a stretch to say that those two people are competing for the same job, but you get my point, right? If we're going to have a job shortage, then everybody who is unqualified for a job to begin with needs to go home. Then there's a whole new segment of people who are qualified for jobs but no longer have them because AI has made them unqualified for their job, because it actually does it better than that. They used to be good, but then AI came around and they showed them how it's done, and now they're no longer needed. So it's one thing if you're coming to this country, you know, in 2010. Things are kind of normal. There's not a sea of people flooding across the southern border. You come in to America, you want to succeed, you want to get a job. Great. Now is a bad time to be doing this. It's a very bad time. First of all, you've come when everybody else came. So you are now one out of 10 million people. You all kind of look the same, have the same skills, don't speak the language. Like, you're no different. You're some dude who from Venezuela. You're no different from some guy from Uganda. You're all unemployable. Right? And then we take that. Then we add an economic collapse to it, which is going to be awful. And then we add AI, which is streamlining and creating a whole bunch of redundancies, eliminating redundancies inside these corporations, because you don't need a guy to do data entry when you've got the machine doing it 10 times faster and half the price. So this is the worst possible time for you to be coming across the border hoping to get something. These handouts are going to They're going to run out. They have to at some point. massive reform is needed. This is like Clower and Piven. Let's move on to housing real quick. Well, not real quick. Section 8 destroys subdivision. You know what Section 8 housing is? It's a voucher. It's the same thing. It's welfare for, it's food stamps for housing. You get a, so the way they set it up is they say that when it comes to Section 8 housing, households pay 30% of their adjusted income and HUD pays the difference. You basically say, this is what I make. I don't make a lot. I make this much. And they say, okay, great. You need to pay, you pay 30% of what you make. Let's say the total amount you make is $2,000 a month. You pay 30%. That's $600. You're going to pay your $600 for this $1,500 a month apartment, right? And the government's going to pay the balance. They'll pay the $900. So they'll pay the difference. They'll pay the 70%. You pay the 30%. That's how Section 8 housing works. And I can say this from real world experience, okay? Selling a new home community and watching the new home community down the street from us that had just finished out selling, same company, same builder, that subdivision was built out, closed out, sold out, and we moved on to the next one. And that was sold out to investors who filled those empty houses, those investor houses that they bought with Section 8 renters. And the value of those properties went in the toilet almost immediately. Car break-ins, burglaries, all kinds of shit. All they did was fill it with people with Section 8 vouchers, and the quality of the neighborhood went in the toilet. And I mean immediately. Because I was selling houses in the next subdivision over, so I had to drive past it, and I knew people who lived there. It's just a crime spree. So, in Washington, D.C., there are 72 assisted renters per 1,000 residents. That is 7.2% of the people living in Washington, D.C. are on government housing assistance. That'll go along. It pairs nicely with their 19.6% receiving SNAP benefits. Washington, D.C., greatest city in the world. All this power. Just can't seem to get, you know, homelessness right or anything else. Murder rates through the roof. Police chief of Washington, D.C. getting busted for lying on the statistics because he was told to by Muriel Bowser, who's a line grifter herself. So housing assistance with regard to Section 8 is highest in Puerto Rico, 61. Six and lowest in Rhode Island. I got that wrong. It's highest in Puerto Rico and Rhode Island and lowest in Idaho and Utah. Idaho and Utah are great states if you want to move someplace where they're not giving out handouts to everybody. They show up as the lowest in housing assistance, SNAP assistance, and all the other assistance. So shout out to Utah and Idaho. New York, there are, there's over 900, I'm going to have to get these numbers right because they're so, the HUD stats are so crazy that they almost sound fake. Okay. Massachusetts has 350,000 people on housing assistance. Pennsylvania has 350,000 people on government assistance for housing. California has 900,000 people on housing assistance there. New York has a million. A million people in the state of New York are on housing assistance. Can I ask, why are you living in New York when it's that expensive? If you need housing assistance to live in New York City, you're living in the wrong city. Fuck, everybody needs housing assistance in New York City. That's why, like, when young people move there to, like, be an actor, be a model, or whatever. They're all like four people in a one-bedroom apartment or two-bedroom apartment. You know, they gotta cram everybody in there because, you know, housing assistance, because it's expensive. You don't get to just ask the government to give you, you know, 70% of your rent covered every month forever. But this is what happens. This is not my numbers. This is from HUD, Housing and Urban Development. This is their numbers. 400,000 in Florida, 400,000 in Illinois, 400,000 people in Ohio, 600,000 people in Texas are on Section 8 housing. 9 million people total in the United States are on government housing. 9 million. That's 3% of the population. Look, what happens when the money stops? This is my fear. What happens when the money stops? What happens when the government, because we know what the laws are around squatting. You know, it is tough to tenant. The sort of contract law that you see with regard to tenant evictions and things like that. I remember sitting through an entire continuing education class, like a 3-hour class, just talking about evictions. It is so hard to get people thrown out of the places. Now imagine this. You have 9 million people receiving government benefits. What if the government benefits just run out? What if there just isn't enough? What if there isn't enough for 2 million of those people, right? Then what happens? What happens to multifamily properties when the money stops? Hard to evict. There'll be mass, if there's an economic collapse or some sort of situation where the SNAP benefits and the Section 8 benefits get shut off. By the way, I said this in February of this year. I said, if you want to create a catastrophe to really kick off the summer of love, you get rid of Section 8 and SNAP benefits. And then you find a justification to get rid of that. It's got to be a reason, right? And then... You use that as the pretext to get everybody out in the street fighting and rioting, and that would do it. I said that with the caveat that you needed to find an explanation for it, like a reason for turning all this stuff off. You can't just wake up one day and turn it off. Government shutdown, I didn't consider, but that could, you know, that's one of those things that's like, well, that would do it. If the goal is to rattle everybody's cage and make people feel a bit uneasy and destabilized, then that would be the way to do it. Yeah, man. I worry about, so the benefits run out, the housing benefits run out, and everyone says, I have nowhere to go. I'm staying here. I'm just not leaving, right? So if you're an owner, a multifamily owner, an owner of a, I don't know, a fourplex, a 10-plex, whatever. You're not like some big corporate owner. You're just a guy who bought an investment apartment complex because you knew it was a good investment. And now you've got, it's a 10-unit place, and you've got half the people in there are on government benefits, and they're refusing to leave. And the government benefits have now dried up, let's say. How do you get them out? You have to go to a judge and get it out. But if that's happening nationwide, with millions of people have decided they're not leaving and squatting, the courts will be backed up. They'll never be able to get these people out. It'll be a catastrophe for anybody who is an owner of a multifamily place. And listen, you'd be tempted to just shut the water off. If you own a 10-plex and nobody's paying you rent, you just go, fuck it, I'll turn the water off. You'll go to jail for that. You know, so so that's where we are. And of course, I look and wonder about what the future of New York City is, you know, a failed experiment, you know. When the best guy to defeat the socialist Zohran Mamdani is the guy who should be on death row for murdering grandmas during COVID, you just have to admit that your city is an abomination. New York City is just cooked. A Zionist Italian versus a Marxist Muslim. Like, what could possibly go wrong? Who wins? Nobody. Nobody wins, right? It's like, it's frustrating to watch this failed experiment, you know, that's happening. So I don't know. How do you think this is all going to play out? Right. How do we think things are going to end, because it feels like people are being pushed to the edge of an economic cliff. You know, you're starting to make calculations that you never wanted to make. Germany did this last year when there was, they blew up, Nord Stream and all that. They're like, oh, we have no heat in the winter. It's like, well, first of all, maybe you shouldn't have been a part of blowing up of your own Nord Stream pipeline. But secondly, like, people were like, we're out in the woods cutting down trees to use in our furnace back home. We're our wood burning stove and things like that. It's like, man, we are at the edge of an economic cliff, and it's not just the United States. It's happening all over the place. So how it's going to play out, I mean, listen, I don't know. I have educated guesses. I would say that if you find the incentive structure to see where things are going, that'd be a pretty good test to see how things play out, because the incentives are very weird right now. And, you know, World War III is on the table. And mistakes get covered up. An economic collapse gets delayed, papered over, print trillions of dollars of money. There's less public resistance in time of war. If World War III were to break out and America got involved in it, started it somehow, if you remember 9/11, you remember the aftermath of 9/11, there was no appetite for people talking about anti-war. The Dixie Chicks got ran out of the country because of it, right? They had to change their name and all that stuff. Like, anyone who was like, hey, let's think twice before we start this war, straight to the gallows, right? What do you think is going to happen? I think people are more likely to do what they're told during World War III. Economic collapse? Fuck, of course. Bond market, derivatives, Deutsche Bank, Credit Suisse, defaults. Yeah, all on the table. I mean, the fact that Credit Suisse and Deutsche Bank are still standing is crazy to me. We've got, what about a real estate collapse? Everything's overvalued. Residential would face a massive correction, of course. We know that. But, if you're in your house and you're not planning to move anywhere, price goes down, price goes up. If you're in there long term, it's less impactful. I'm not going to say it doesn't matter, but it's less impactful. If you're short term, price appreciation is all you're looking at, right? Or you're trying to get renters in there. But you can't put renters in your house anymore because you can't be sure that they're going to actually pay, right? Everything's so expensive. And God forbid they fall behind on their rent, like we just talked about. You'll never get them out. So a real estate collapse on the residential side would be a calamity, of course. But what about commercial real estate? That takes down the medium-sized banks. Great. It starts like a stampede. A panic in medium-sized banks would mean that people have to make a decision. I either go to a small bank or a big bank. If I go to a small bank, the chances of that bank collapsing is greater than if I go to Bank of America, because I know they'll get bailed out. So all of a sudden, in the aftermath of some sort of weird real estate collapse, which you think should have nothing to do with anything other than real estate, next thing you know, banking is impacted by it. And because banking is impacted by it, retail banking and the behavior of the people starts to take hold, and people start to panic and freak out and start saying, I got to get my money out of this small bank and get it to a big bank because I'm afraid this small bank's going to go out of business. And so everybody from the small bank has the same idea at the same time, because it's a panic, and they start moving their money out to the big bank. And then what happens? Self-fulfilling prophecy. The small bank does collapse, in part because everybody just panicked, grabbed their money and left. So this is the potential, right? Interest rates, Trump wants them low. He's going to get someone in there to make them low once Powell's term expires, and they'll put somebody in there who will do exactly what he's told to do, even though the Federal Reserve is a private bank. And then what happens? What does America look like 10 years from now? Might look like Brazil. Which is great if you're on a beach, but it ain't great if you're in the city. You know, 5% rich, 15% middle class, 80% dirt poor. That's where we're going, unfortunately. I will say this, if we're looking for the bright side here, America has better demographics than a lot of these other countries. Way better than China, way better than Japan, in terms of the future. Now, it may not matter to you how our demographics are, and it's such a slow-moving thing that, you know, it's hard to get excited about it. But China has a, you know, has a population problem moving forward. And Japan, as I think a lot of people know, has just a reproductive problem. You know, just there's just not enough people reproducing in Japan to keep that going. And then we add in all of, you know, economics, demographics, and all of this blend in, the role that BRICS is going to play, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and their consortium of other countries that's only growing, and how that's going to play a role in energy independence for us when you've got a lot of these countries that are part of BRICS are major energy producers. And so you go, well, maybe we have to take a look at getting involved in Venezuela. Right, you know, because their neighbor's Brazil, and you know, Venezuela gets a little dose of that communism, and then it's a domino theory, right? It just everything starts spreading. That's what got us into Vietnam. That's the thinking that got us into Vietnam. But Venezuela and America, you know, for America's new Marshall Plan, keep your eyes on that, right? But and frankly, and I hate to be the bearer of no bad news, but nobody's coming to save Europe, you know. It's got nothing but liabilities. They always throw their hands up and say, please save us. The evil Russians are going to invade Europe and take all of this. It's like, don't flatter yourself. You don't have anything they want. Like, what are they going to do? Take your countries and then be forced to pay your pensions to everybody? No. Russia, the best thing Russia can do is stay away from Europe and let them strangle themselves in their own hubris and arrogance and stupidity, and while tying themselves to the anchor that is the euro. Good job, guys. Let's talk a little bit about some solutions. There's just some low-hanging fruit, okay? If an economic collapse comes, you're not going to be able to stop it, okay? That's just the reality. You're going to be going along for the ride with everybody else. We all will. However, I don't know. Do you want to have floaties on? When the wave comes, do you want to be on a surfboard when the wave comes? Do you want to be out there just standing like a dipshit on the, you know, on the beach waiting for it? I mean, because it's up to you. Choice is yours. You see this as happening. I mean, I wish I had better news, but the numbers don't lie, and the numbers are pretty terrifying. So if you see this, if you understand where you are, what the situation is, do something. You know, do something now. Because, you know, now is like a future force multiplier. You know, you'll be dreaming at some point of getting in your souped-up DeLorean, setting the time for the tail end of 2025 so that you can go back and do all the things you wish you had done now before things got bad. Do you have your money out of the bank? You got to reevaluate that relationship. They legalized bank bail-ins. They're going to steal your money. They're going to do it. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. Okay. So have your money out of the bank, have some cash, move your IRA and 401k into gold and silver. You can do that. Did you know that? Nobody's going to tell you that you can do that. You can not, and I'm not talking GLD, right? Like I'm not talking about, stocks, gold stocks. I'm talking about physical gold and physical silver. Your IRA and 401k are currently invested in the stock market, which is a Ponzi scheme and a house of cards. If you are interested in moving it, talk to Tony Arterburn. He can do it for you. You have to be the right license. You have to have the ability to do it. Not everybody can do it. He can do it. So if you're sitting on, you know, good for you, you got a nice 401k, but you're concerned that it might evaporate, I would be too. And if you want to turn it into gold, physical gold, macroaggressions.gold, go there. Talk to Tony Arterburn. Tell him, just tell him you have questions and you want to talk, because he's done this for a ton of people, moving large amounts of money into gold and silver. But you got to be early. If you're waiting for the news to tell you this is the move, and by the way, to be fair, I'm not licensed to give financial advice, but if you're waiting for the news to tell you that things are going to get weird, it's never going to happen, right? So have food. You can get it at My Storable Food Guy, Augustin Farms, or you can get it at Costco, or you can get it at wherever you go, but get it. Just think. Do it now. Gold, silver, Bitcoin, bullets, alcohol, auto parts, above phones for secret communications. Are you familiar? Getting above phone? You know, or whatever. If you're like, I see this is coming. I'm storable. I've got all this stuff. We're ready. You know, I'm thinking, good for you, man. If you need a side hustle, you know, to make some extra money, make survival kits, sell those on Craigslist. If you're a customer of Legal Shield, you've heard me talk about don'tgetpushedaround.com. If you're a customer of Legal Shield, if you have the membership plan, you can represent them if you'd like. If you want a side hustle, you know, a network, a group of people that you think might benefit from it, and you're a member, you can sell it to them as well. You can make money doing that. So there's ways out there. There's things that you can do. I think that, like, you know, like, I've had a lot of people say, like, what can I do? Jobs are tough or anything. You're going to have to be creative. You're going to have to be proactive. You're going to have to be the guy who goes around and blows out people's sprinklers this time of year for $100 a pop. You know, when it gets cold in the winter, you got to get the water out of your sprinkler so it doesn't freeze and expand and destroy your sprinklers. You're the guy. I just hired a guy for $100 to come around and blow out my sprinklers, right? Hang Christmas lights. I had a guy who got the job hanging our Christmas lights simply because he was Cousin Eddie. He said his business was Cousin Eddie's Christmas lights. I was like, you're fucking hired immediately. Like, you know, I don't need your resume for Christmas lights. If you're referencing Christmas vacation in your business, you've got my money, man. I'll throw it at you. Or maybe you plow driveways for extra money, or you make Easter baskets or gift baskets, whatever. There are things out there that do not require you to ask somebody to hire you. You just take charge yourself, right? So if you're interested in other solutions for things like this, at Activist Post, we have a newsletter. We started it in August. It's twice a week. It's great. Go read an article at Activist Post. You'll get a prompt somewhere along there. You'll see down at the bottom of the article, sign up for our weekly newsletter. Do that for a couple of reasons. First, it's a good way to stay in touch with me, because if anything happens to this show, then, and you think I just disappeared, I can always communicate with people. So we've got that. Second of all, the Wednesday email blast that goes out is called the Solution Series. It's fantastic. Okay. And I'm not just saying that because it's ours. I mean, we really give you actionable information, things that you can use. So sign up for the newsletter. Sunday, the newsletter is the weekly wrap-up, top stories. Check it out. If you missed it, read these real quick. Wednesday is Solution Series. We have a problem. Here's the problem. How do we fix it? Here's a couple of solutions for it. There you go. Right. So it's out there, you know. And I hate doing episodes like this about impending economic catastrophes and things like that, because part of it feels like you're speaking it into existence, though I know I'm not. But again, I'm not trying to make people fearful about this, because I don't think we're at our best when you're coming from a place of fear. But I do think it's important to be knowledgeable and informed on it so that you can plan accordingly. And then, you know, if the bad stuff, when the tsunami comes, you at least have a lifeboat for it, you know. Hard assets are a bet against the system, so have that hedge. You know, have that. Be proactive while you can. This is your DeLorean moment. Get everything your future self needs and get it fast. And if you want to connect with me, you can do so. Macroaggressions.io is the best place to do it. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.